In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. It's Jeffrey with eyes glued on the World Series.
I must admit, I just because of the teams that are in the series, I have to root for Philadelphia because I lived there for almost 10 years.
Okay. Tim, who are you going to root for?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I'm sort of torn. I have a friend whose son is a big Rays fan, and then I have a cousin who is a big Phillies fan. So I think what I'm going to do is root for a seven-game series.
I love how you make it a family affair. Let me re-ask the question. Tim, who are you going to root for?
I think I'd like to see the Rays win it, which means
absolutely.
Now that Philadelphia win.
Yeah. Absolutely. They're the little guys. I'd like to see them spank a well-funded team. I think that's, you know. And I got nothing. I got no love for Philly. Never have.
Ooh.
Yeah, is there a story there?
The Vorlon doles out the harshness.
Yeah, no, I don't know what, you know, it's a wonderful country. I've been blessed to see an awful lot of it. I've spent a lot of time in many cities throughout the country, and I don't know what it is about that town and I, but we do not. It's oil and water. No, I got nothing. I got nothing that would want to bring me to Philadelphia.
You podcast listeners in Philadelphia, that's Jeffrey at...
Yeah. Yeah, at farpointmedia.net. Go ahead and send the hate mail. And we'll settle up when the series is over. And you'll be able to...
Yeah, it should be good stuff. Hmm. Hey, look, before we go any further, I have an announcement to make. We've actually had about 5 emails on this thing come into the podcast here, actually, today. And I think this announcement is going to cause even more consternation than JMS's announcement about Babylon 5, all or nothing sort of thing. Are you ready for this? The joint venture between SAB Miller's U.S. unit and Molson Coors Brewing Company told distributors in a letter Monday that production of the malt liquor beverage Zima was discontinued as of October 10th. Chief Marketing Officer Andy England says the decision was due to weakness in the, quote, alternative segment and declining consumer interest. He says distributors can get remaining Zima inventories most likely through December.
Wow. I'm holding back the tears.
Well, you know what? I think if we've had letter-writing campaigns to try to get Star Trek back on the air, get Enterprise back on the air, to get Firefly back on the air, we can get a letter-writing campaign to get Zima back in the stores.
No, that would just be wrong.
I think when tens of letters flood into that office.
Tens.
Yeah, right.
You know what we should suggest, though, just to keep the Zima name alive? You know how, like, Sam Adams comes out with those special Christmas brews and Stone comes out with those special those yearly brews or every 8 years brews? Right. We should have them come out with Zima, like a special batch of Zima, like every other year. That way it makes it rarer and more coveted and guarantees that in 25 years when someone is able to undo... Because this is obviously a retro shadow plot.
I'm thinking.
I'm going to take issue with you there, Summer, because I think rarity and obscurity seems to be the problem all along with Zima, and so.
Exactly what is rare? Alcohol and sugar.
To create a false market for Zima, thereby keeping the name alive until 2259, so we can have it in the Zocalo.
No. It needs to die.
We're, you know what? This is a Back to the Future kind of quandary we've got.
It is.
Or even better, it would be like Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Oh, no.
Okay, if it's the Babylon podcast that effectively keeps Zima alive until 2250, yeah.
Well, somebody's got to carry the torch, Mike.
Somebody has to.
Then Millard better send us a damn check. That's all I can say.
Yeah, of course. Maybe there's a way for us to contact all the distributors and let them know that by advertising with us, we can help them blow out that nasty inventory they were trying to upload for quite a while.
That's right.
You guys can all sign bottles. And
But it doesn't even have the original B5 Zima logo. Or, you know, that bottle doesn't even exist anymore, right?
Nope, it does not.
So that kind of, you know. It's hard for me to get too passionate about it then if it's got a whole new look.
Let us revel in our silliness. Jeez.
I'm very
serious. Okay, now what?
Well, no, see, I don't know if he meant the line in that article that got me going was the alcoholic energy drinks. I had no idea that, and I'm going to use this, the kids these days were dumping vodka in their Red Bull or Red Bull in their vodka. I was like, what?
I just don't know what rock you've been under, Summer.
I've been behind this computer, you know, hand cranking the Farpoint Media machines.
I love the term. What was it? Malternative?
Alternative. Yes. That's the one that makes me giggle like a school girl.
That's very nice.
I think that was a misprint. It should have been malevolent.
Maybe now, if they push the alternative term harder.
Yeah.
You're alternative.
I think that's exactly what this podcast is for many people.
The alternative. I'm out of beer. I'm going to listen to the Babylon podcast.
Alternative programming.
All right, kids, go rush out and buy the last cases of Zima because it's going away.
Yes, why you do it is up to you, either to prevent your friends from drinking the last of it or to save it for yourself, you know, for a 10-year surprise party later on. Either way, doesn't matter.
Hey, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just the remaining stores last until 2259, and it's just fermented so well by that time that it's actually drinkable.
Yeah.
That could be.
I'm sticking with that. That makes more sense.
You know what we could do is we could crate it up, put it in a capsule that says do not open until 2250, and rocket it into deep space. And by the time we've got faster than light drive, they'd catch up to it and they'd open it up. Oh, look, Zima.
We could bury some on some of Mike's lunar property.
There you go.
Yeah, even better.
I have a recollection of Zima, because actually back in the day we did drink a bunch of it at B5, and the taste of Zima was so similar to the goo that they put on the back of postage stamps. I often couldn't tell the difference and thought maybe there was a government conspiracy there. That may be
what hindered their first campaigns. It's like the goo on postage stamps.
It was an alternative.
You
just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Had a hard day of licking stamps. Have a Zima. It won't taste much different.
Mm-hmm.
You're still never going to mail that letter anyway, so what does it matter?
Oh, my goodness.
Makes a whole new thing for dumpster diving. People going in there, pulling out old pieces of, you know, postage and trying to lick off the back of the stamp.
It's like those frogs in Brazil, man.
The lizard that squirts blood out of his eye and Zima out the other one.
Zima, it's like dumpster diving without the diapers.
So Zima is on the endangered species list, is what you're telling me, right?
Yes, it has gone the way of New Coke.
Wow.
Probably for the betterment of humanity in the long run.
Oh. It's such an oxymoron. I don't know if it's a happy day in the universe or a sad day in the universe.
I don't know. Should we have a moment of silence?
Hey, an iconic image from a staple of our sci-fi fandom has been relegated to irrelevance by the forces of time and economics and bad alternative choices.
God, you are a geek of the unbelievable power.
And that's why you love me.
That's really fair. But you would use the word Zima and iconic in the same sentence.
I said the sign, the symbol, the logo was iconic, not the beverage.
I think we're splitting hairs there.
We are splitting hairs. But that's okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the Zima thing is going to be quite to the level of JMS's announcement.
Yeah, we're not going to rouse the troops with that one.
You might have teased it a little better.
But hopefully we can get a good laugh out of some that are listening. Hopefully.
Yeah. We should try to contact that person at Zima, at Coors.
That's what I'm thinking.
And get them on the show.
I'm thinking and, you're and right.
Praise their product and tell them how important it is in Summerland.
I think that'd be a hell of a show, guys. Exactly. I think you should do it.
We don't need Mike Vahar on this show. We need the distribution queen from Zima.
Yeah.
Good God.
The B5 timeline is a mess, and I just need to rule it.
Right. Because I didn't see that in my chronology.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in there. Zima went away.
I haven't found it yet. I'm going to have to go back and go through it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, should we take a break and then come back and do some geeking?
Yes, we shall.
Okay.
On the next Babylon 5.
Most of you have heard of the attacks against civilian targets by ships from Earth.
Well, we intend to stop them.
To save a rebel planet from annihilation, Sheridan is forced into a showdown.
Clark will scramble everything he's got.
That could change the course of the war.
Open fire.
Anyone gets in between us and them won't live long enough to regret it.
No surrender. No retreat.
On the next Babylon 5.
Time for some thrilling heroics.
We're going to change the world.
There are many reasons not to lock yourself in a little room and talk to yourself insistently.
What can it be? We're all doomed. Who's flying this thing?
This isn't one of them.
Can I come in?
Listen to Strangely Literal, the podcast, bringing you original fan fiction from Buffy, Angel, Firefly, and other parts of the Jossverse. Look for us on iTunes, Yahoo, and at our website, strangelyliteral.com.
Make fun of the ex-demon. I can hear you in private. I dislike that Anya. She's newly human and strangely literal.
What? I don't say that. No one says that. No one talks that way.
Digging down into the most obscure facts in fandom, this is
We are back. We are here. We stand before you here today to discuss No Surrender, No Retreat.
Never surrender, never give up.
Never give up, never surrender.
Yeah. You know what? I watched this episode twice here in the past week. I actually sat down with my daughter to watch it tonight. Interested, yeah. So it was that was kind of cool.
There are just so many moments in this episode.
It's really an intriguing mix of storylines between, of course, our heroes in Babylon 5 finally taking on Earth Alliance and the interplay between Jakar and Londo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Well, we can start with the beginning. Basically, Sheridan and Ivanova saying, okay, we cannot wait any longer. We cannot hold back any longer. We are going to move against Earth. But here's what we need the League of Non-Aligned Worlds to do. We need you to not honor any pact you've made with Earth or Earth Alliance, not respond to any calls for military assistance, unless it's, you know, humanitarian aid, rescuing somebody in trouble. And we need you to help protect Babylon 5 against any possible retaliation. Other than wise, sit back and watch the show. Have some popcorn.
Yeah. Right, right. Well, like Jakar's, you know, little... there's a little bit of input there. He just kind of stands up and says, okay, you know, we, you know, Narns had treaties from Earth. We helped them out, and where were they? And the Shadows were doing their thing. They're nowhere to be found, so we owe them nothing. Yeah, you know, and it was interesting because one of the things I was reflecting on, at first I thought it was kind of odd, is Sheridan was all about keeping the League out of things. You know, he even mentions it that, you know, there's a lot of anti-alien sentiment back on Earth, and, you know, if the League gets involved, it's going to be bad news. And yet, we see Sheridan fighting alongside with Minbari and commanding them. But then I remembered that Earth already figures he's under Minbari influence anyway, so with having a thing with Delenn. So I guess that's not as much of an issue as, say, Brakiria, Pac-Moran game and all that, so...
I think it's more of him wanting to make sure that not coming in with aliens on board to make a statement. So I, you know, we know the government doesn't care one way or the other, but he, you know, as we see later, he wants to make an impact on the people who vote for the people running EarthGov. You know, this is humans. This isn't humans under the control of aliens.
Right,
this is
right.
Us making a decision because what we see going on back home is we don't think it's right and we can't take it anymore.
Was the commander of Heracles, after they relieved the captain, I can't remember her name, I'm sorry, but she does say, you know, you've got the League on your side, what do you want us for? And that was Sheridan's response. I want this to be a clean fight.
Yeah.
This is, it's our people. Yeah, that was it's interesting. And then there's the other contrast. The Shadow War was won, or at least the solution was found, basically by, you know, saying we're not going to play along anymore. And, you know, the Shadows and the Borlons, having been found out, basically leave. Now we're in another war, but this one definitely is all about swinging that bat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an interesting contrast that way. As you know, Sheridan's comment, we're going to come in three waves, we're going to surround them, and then we're going to win by superior firepower. Okay.
And I think the difference between that is the difference between, I don't know, the evolution level of their opponent.
Well, I think it's just really two different, it's in essence two entirely different kinds of conflicts.
Right. The, you know, you're not going to have, you're not going to beep in a philosophical arena with Clark's forces. There's no room and no time, really, to enter into a philosophical debate with them. This is retaking something by force that was taken away by subterfuge and force. Because,
okay, well,
hey, you know, Earth Force One blowing up, not an accident. That was an overt, aggressive act.
Well, then let's take your comment about not having time for a philosophical conversation. What do you think about Sheridan's discussion with Captain Mackey? I mean,
that was a debate over, I guess, reminding him of the philosophical or the ethical stance to take. And, you know, he can do that with people he trained under or trained with, because they're on the same level. He's not going to be able to go to Earth and have this conversation with Clark.
No, but I did. I did enjoy the conversation. You know, here they are. They're squaring off for battle, and Mackie jumps in, violating radio silence, which automatically indicates that he's not necessarily going lockstep with the orders given from Heracles, from the group command. But he also doesn't just show up and say, "Oh, I'm on your side. I'm glad you're here. I'm turning coat." It was, you know, from where he was sitting at first, it's like, "John, you can't win. Don't throw it away."
Yeah, you know, and it actually came across to me as, you know, a friend of John's, a teacher of John's, of Sheridan, saying, "Hey, you know, stop while you can, while you still have your life, because this is not going to end well, the course you've taken." And he's like, "You know, hey, I can't. Remember what you taught us?" And he's like, "Well..."
Right, right. Yeah. And I love his first officer taking command. I know you wanted a promotion, but I thought it was...
The look of mirth on his face. He's like, "Yeah, I was kind of waiting for you to do something like that." He's just...
Yeah, right, yeah.
And completely unworried about it, like, "Huh, all right, now I know where you stand."
Right, right. And then at the end, when he gets wrestled away, "Oh, the crew just delayed his promotion."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, there was a lot of neat little, you know, tactical things going on there. You know, we see the, you know, Sheridan's trying to determine who's friend and foe, or at least foe and potential not foe. And I love Marcus's comment. You know, we have to know who's, you know, who's aggressive and who's not. And it's like, well, they could all be aggressive, just some more aggressive than others.
Yeah, you could, I don't know, you could tell that Sheridan is really, really wrestling. He doesn't want to damage or destroy any more ships than he has to. I mean, attacking humans, you know, people he's served with,
yeah,
or commanded at some point in time, they, like you said, they wear the same uniform. This is not an easy thing he's doing, but he believes in the greater ideal of a free Earth.
Yeah.
And I like how he put up there, you know, against all threats, foreign and domestic, and damn it, this one's domestic.
Yep, yep. Yeah, it was, you know, the battle sequences were powerful, and again, you know, as we've commented in earlier Deep Geeking, how the special effects or the visual effects have really ramped up through the season.
Mm-hmm.
This was really pulling out the stops in many ways. The only gripe I had is I thought the nebula background around Proxima III looked kind of hokey.
Yeah, there was something, I hadn't noticed it before, but my attention was drawn by it during one of the sweet buys where you see the pan, like Proxima III is on the right, and then they pan to the left following a group of ships. And the tendrils of the edge of the nebula in the background look like they'd been, you know, 3D rendered in Photoshop or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just that was just not working for me at that little bit. But again, that was minor. I think they did a good job of capturing the chaos of that kind of battle, and especially when you think about the fact that it's not like you're up against, you know, you're not a Star Fury facing against Minbari fighters or Narn fighters or whatever. It's like you're up against other Furies. So, you know, you really got to stay sharp to know who's friend and who's foe in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, I think, you know, I this is something I think that JMS has always strove to do with, you know, let's face it, it's a war story. But I think that he does a good job of putting the characters in a situation where this kind of conflict and violence is necessary, but nobody, there's no glory to it.
Mm-mm. And it's right there in the opening, too, the year we took back what was ours.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know what, it's that comment, of course, it comes from Shakar, and the little clip there in the opening is, of course, with the Narn, the stoning Reefa. But this was like this was the first time I actually equated this with Sheridan going back to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, right.
Yeah. The the what was it? There's one other scene during the Proxima battle, when the Pollux is destroyed. It's you see the pain on Sheridan's face when it starts to get destroyed, when it's starting to catch on fire. And he says, get to the life pods, get to the life pods. And it just goes up.
Right.
And that there's like one, I don't know how to explain it, but he turns away as it's exploding. And then you see the white star shake like it was too close. And when the wave, the concussion force from it reaches the ship, I was like, whoa, right. that was nicely done. I hadn't noticed that before.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that either. It was all, something that had impacted it or something. I noticed that as well. Yeah, neat little things like that. I like Marcus's comment, the little exchange there. Well, we've won. And Sharon's like, no, we didn't win. We just achieved the goal.
We achieved the mission goal. We didn't win anything. And I think that's where you realize he doesn't see this as something to win, because you can't really win when you have to fight and defeat and even kill so many of your own military.
Yeah.
And he's like, we have a goal, we have a mission. Neither side's going to win this. You know, in the end, hopefully Earth will win as a whole.
Right. Right. Well, and that's the thing. I think you really get a good sense of the moral quandary there. There, the scene where he's got the captains of the Earth Force ships on the White Star, and they're debating the situation. What do we do? They come back again, sort of touching on the legality of the orders, and the commander says, well, it's not the military's place to make policy, and as you mentioned earlier, there's the defense of everything, against enemies, foreign and domestic, and, that you're there to uphold the office of the president, but not the person in it. And Mackey's comments, well, that's splitting a mighty fine hair. Sharon's response is it? But that's just the debate. And I think as much as anything, it's the oratory power of Sheridan that carries the day.
Mm-hmm. He has his convictions, he has his beliefs, he knows they're right, and he's able to convey his thoughts and, more importantly, his feelings concisely to where other people can understand. They might not, like she said, I might not agree with what you're doing, with your methods, but I understand why you're doing it.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, we get Jakar and Londo. And for all the certainty that Sheridan has that what he's doing is right, may not like it, but it's he's going to do it because he believes it's the right thing to do. We get Londo struggling to determine what is right and making, he's making an attempt to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as powerful as those battle scenes were, it was equally as powerful the scenes between Londo and Jakar. And that one where Londo goes to Jakar's quarters, wow, that was just really, really powerful.
Yeah.
Because part of it is, up to this point, we've seen Jakar become a more open individual and a more, he's the person that's more willing to take the risk, whether that's physical or emotional. And here the roles are reversed.
Yeah, it's more than reversed. You see Jakar, you realize that he is still harboring some resentment and some pain over what's happened the past 3 years, actually.
Yeah.
And that, before then, you didn't see it. You didn't see any of it. You saw him, working with Franklin to, get his eyesight back. You saw him interacting with other people. And then you're in this quiet moment where Londo has come into his personal space, his little piece of home, and it looks like he doesn't process it well. He's not really over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for good reason. He went through a lot. But just the quiet, the complete rejection of Londo's being without saying a word is just impressive.
Well, what I find interesting is at this point, he's garnered our sympathy, and he has, you know, he's had a religious conversion. You know, he's become enlightened in many ways. But here is a place where that enlightenment is put to the test, and he fails at first.
I don't see it as a failure. I don't see it as a failure.
I do, and I think that's something he ends up coming around to at the end when he does show up to share that drink with Londo. But
I don't see it as a failure, because something like that, you are going to have to take a moment. You are going to have to take a moment to think about, to honestly reflect on what you're feeling. And you figure how long it took him to get back to Londo to go and find Londo out at that bar. I'm going to guess it was half an hour.
Really? I saw it as longer.
How long would Londo have sat at that bar moping? He would eventually have just gone back to his...
Easily half a day.
Really?
I don't think he went there right after he left Londo's quarters. That's just not the sense of it that I got. I really felt that, you know, he went off and do whatever it is that Londo had to do, being Londo, you know, tending to things, to running the Republic or what have you. And then that was, all right, I reached out to Jakar, I did what I could, I got to take care of this, and now it's a quiet moment some hours later, and I don't know, I'm at a loss, I don't know what to do. And then that's when Jakar found him. Yeah, I considered it a fair lapse of time. Maybe not days, but certainly a stretch of hours.
I wouldn't have seen it as more than 1 hour, but that's just me.
Well, no, that's interesting.
I would like to find out.
One of the things I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said I would like to see if I could sit down and find out what the span of time is for that. But, interesting. I also this is one of the reasons I wanted to get Volume 10 of the script books, because this Volume 10 hits the heart of Season 4. And in it, JMS actually talks about some of the story arc sacrifices he had to make in order to squeeze in all the story he wanted to squeeze in, thinking that Season 4 would be all he'd get.
Really.
And he actually goes through a list of things where he's like, yeah, I knew I'd have to sacrifice this. I knew I wouldn't have to show this. And he does explain a couple of items where he would have, you know, because his original plan was to have the Earth Civil War go into Season 5. We know this.
Yeah.
And he realizes how much story he had to sacrifice in order to get what he thought needed to be told by the end of Season 4, so that, you know, if in case there wasn't a Season 5. And it did answer a lot of questions for me, because I know a lot of people know already, just from listening to this podcast for 135 episodes, that I personally, from a story standpoint, was dissatisfied with Season 5. And he goes into a lot more explanation than I've ever seen previously about what he did in specific areas and why.
I'd like to see that sometime. But
so if anybody out there has an extra copy of Volume 10, go ahead and send that to Tim.
Yeah. I know we have this discussion. We'll continue to have the discussion. I think that given those constraints, I think other than the Minbari Civil War, I think that the story flows very nicely. And it's moments that we see, like with the Londo and Jakar, that in my mind overcome any sort of deficiencies in plot. The one thing that I really wanted to touch on, and maybe this is digressing a bit, but that scene, again, in Jakar's quarters, where Londo really opens up, you know, he comes in and Jakar gives him the jab about you know, I'm sorry, the chains aren't here. The cleaning service must have taken them away. And Londo responds with how his quarters are like the Narn homeworld, but dry and red and depressing. And, you know, Londo then says, well, you know, look at us. We fall back in these old patterns. And then he just suddenly opens up and he says, what you said there about the chains, that was cruel. That was mean. And it really, I mean, it really, to me, was very touching. It was like Londo finally opening up and saying, I have feelings about all this. What I did as a patriot, I did because I'm a patriot. But you know what? I've made some bad decisions. And you know, I don't deserve to be treated as crappy as you're treating me right now. And I really, that really resonated with me.
And I'm just seeing Londo's face during all of that. You see he's trying to express himself. He's trying to let Jakar know that he's really, really sorry. He's trying to make better decisions from a more enlightened position than he was 2 years ago. And he's struggling with the fact that Jakar's not giving him the benefit of the doubt anymore. And you really can't blame Jakar, because Jakar was kind of burned by him twice, really, really badly. So he's struggling with his own difficulties.
Yeah, and I think that's again, credit to JMS's writing, that Jakar's heart was not softened by that initial plea that Londo went through all that, bearing his soul such as it was, and then, you know, Jakar, without a word, just dumps the drink back into the bottle and continues on with his writing. And it's only, you know, later on that Londo comes along, Jakar comes along and understands where Londo's coming from. You know, his comment at the end is, it's kind of humorous. He says, okay, you know, release the statement, but I'm not signing my name on the same page as yours.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I actually think that decision of Jakar's allows him to be more open to the stuff that happens in season 5.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. I think this is very much where that seed is planted.
And you have to admit, it is pretty funny, because when he's like, I will sign, make your statement, but I will not sign on the same page. Do we have an understanding? He says, oh yeah.
Yeah.
But literally seeing the emotion on Londo's face when Jakar poured the drink back into the flask, I mean, you feel for him, because you realize he's trying to do the right thing, and he's had it slapped back in his face.
Yeah.
And then when you see him at that bar, just the despondence on his face, you really, really feel it, because it's like he's lost hope. He wants to do the right thing. He wants to help. He wants to start helping out his friends, and he feels like his friends aren't letting him help because of what he had done previously with the occupation, the attack and the occupation of Narn, and, you know, his involvement with, you know, on the side of the shadows. And then Jakar comes back and brings him back that one shred of hope, and the tears in his eyes after Jakar leaves. That's moving.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant stuff. One last thing to touch on before we wrap it up is Mike Vahar's direction in this. I mean, it's obvious in things of how the characters respond and how they, you know, the timing of things, whatever else, but the camera work in it is really spectacular. The camera is almost always in motion. Moving from establishing shots to close-ups, just all throughout. It really is really dynamic, and it really brings the whole thing to life.
You know what actually stood out for me this time? Because I actually noticed, I've started watching shows and movies more to see how camera placements and camera movements affect the mood or the perception that the director wants to give to the audience. The overhead shots as Marcus is sprinting from the customs area through the hallways down into the war room, just that sense of urgency is increased because you have an overhead shot. You have this one lone guy trying to run through crowds. He's in, you know, distress. He needs to get to the other end. And just having that overhead shot by seeing how much he has to run through is increased. At least that's what it seemed like to me.
No, I agree. I think you're right. I think I'm just thinking, you know, they're in the war room.
Mm-hmm.
Sheridan's talking with Franklin, and the camera just kind of slides around from left to right to come to rest to bring Franklin to the fore. And then as he moves off, it's sort of a medium shot, but then it tracks around as Sheridan comes forward mm-hmm. to look over Ivanova's shoulder, and there she is in the foreground looking through a transparent panel. It's okay, you know, here's what we got to do. Here's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really lively camera work, and it really helped bring everything.
Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was a continuation of when Marcus ran into the room, right?
It's in the same scene, yeah.
Right. Cause like,
not,
and
not
you
a
got
shot, but still the same sort of urgency. Yeah.
Right, because you get the urgency when the doors open and Marcus runs in. It's like he's trying to reach over the heads of the people who are in his way, saying, I'm here, I've got it. And then it descends in and becomes part of the middle of the scene and then pulls out to pan around the outside of it to focus on each verse. I'm like, that was cool. So yeah, I definitely want to talk to Mike Vahar because he's directed some of my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to him about his impression, like what, you know, shooting that scene that way, what, you know, the usual questions.
Yeah, right. Well, it'd be interesting to contrast that, you know, we've talked with David Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so curious to know how someone like Vahar approaches it. A show like Babylon 5 and see where those differences are.
Because he was doing something right because they kept bringing him back.
I know, exactly. So.
Cool.
Anything else?
No, I'm just trying to count up in my head how many voicemails Gary's going to leave us for this one.
Yeah.
Thinking five. What do you think? Should we take bets?
I think we're looking at 7 or 8.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think so.
All right.
We didn't really discuss Garibaldi leaving for Mars, but we'll get into that next week.
Well, yeah, because it's the more I think about what's going on now with Garibaldi, the more certain other things start to shine differently for me.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested. But yeah, his reaction to Veer's news and just his deadpan, you know, when are you coming back? I'm not.
Not, yep.
Yeah. That had a level of finality to it that I hadn't actually expected.
My daughter, who obviously hasn't really watched much Babylon 5, so he says that he was kidding, right? Nope. No, he really wasn't.
Yep. So yeah, we'll talk about that more, and I'm sure Gary will leave us a voicemail about it, right, Gary? We love you, Gary. Anyway, I think that'll do it for this week's Deep Geeking.
I think you're right.
And we will take a quick break and come back with a voicemail and some final thoughts.
Age when airships ruled the sky and incredible gadgets of unimaginable power were complex creations of gears, clockworks, and latches? If so, join the crew of the HMS Astrolab for Steampunk Spectacular, a fortnightly foray into the world of gears and steam. Steampunk Spectacular is a gentleman's club for adventuresses, sky pirates, gentlemen explorers, alchemists, and steampunkers of every stripe. You can find us at www.steampunkspectacular.com. With book reviews, event announcements, interviews, and original fiction, Steampunk Spectacular is your camera obscura for the ethersphere.
And we are back. to close out this episode of the Babylon Podcast. And all right.
No surrender, no retreat. I got to tell you, I didn't surrender. While you guys were geeking, I did a little quick internet searching here, and thanks to the brilliance of YouTube, I've actually come up with a few Zima commercials. So, with all due respect to the Zima people and their attorneys, just roll with this and don't sue our asses, okay? This first one, Tim, is the one I think you said you saw, because there's some very cool hip-hop people doing hip-hop-y things here.
See, this is hot bodies dancing. Zima bottles flying in the air. Some serious booty shots.
And that's all they have, yeah. No, try Zima. It tastes great. You can't live without it. Let's try this one here. See what this... you guys can all do it.
Oh, my God. I feel like such a chick.
That was called Zima commercial for hot days. I'm not even sure that was legit, but it was brilliant, okay? Because it's like this totally ragged out, hungover guy, and he chokes down a Zima bottle, and that's when he realizes he feels like a chick. That's great. Let's check this one out.
Beautiful people drinking their Zima bottles. Champagne environment. Smiling faces. Oh, it's the old Zima bottles, too. It's the old ones.
Well, the music improved.
Yeah. And it's nothing but them smiling and drinking Zima. Clearly, they're stoned. Is that it? With this Alanis Morissette riff going on?
The taste is clear.
Is clear.
Ah, very good. So that's a legitimate one. That's kind of cool.
Wow,
that was really, really bad.
Links for the show notes.
I know, this is great stuff. Oh yeah, links for the. Okay, do I have to send it? Well, you guys.
Yeah.
All right. And here's a 2006 Zima commercial. Let's check this one out.
He told you.
Let's go! Oh, somebody's jumping, oh, no, the music pumping, everybody say, ho! Oh, I'm by a big kina, yeah, get on the dance floor. You hit Yokohama, gotta do your
hot dogs, booty, chicken, and.
A little wild. Zima.
Nice. Nice. I love it. I love it. It's all good stuff.
Okay, well, pull that channel down because it's echoing really bad.
All right, so we have plenty of Zima ads to refer to. We have
to quench your thirst for Zima ads.
Oh,
as you can tell, I was really paying attention to your geeking because I was busy enjoying all.
You were busy searching for Zima ads. But what I thought was, you have, for some reason, Zima automatically connected in my mind with zombie. So we've got like World War Zombie, World War Zima instead of World War Z, and World War Zima.
Like
Zima.
That.
Turns out Zima is the lost zombie repellent, and when they stopped making it, we became vulnerable to zombie infestations. So we have to keep the Zima around to keep the zombies away. Well, I think it's a good idea.
Like a shark repellent.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to punch a zombie in the nose, so if it takes Zima instead, I'm all for it.
And just think,
hey, maybe that's the trick.
Could have sobered up had they been just Zima drinkers. Instead of laying in the gutter with their Thunderbird, had we replaced it all with Zima, they all would have said, nah, that's all right. I'll take up crack instead. I'm good.
Yeah, that's the trick. What you do is you lay out zombie bait, brains drenched in Zima, and it makes them unable to even shuffle.
We'll pass on your suggestion to George Romero, okay? But, Tim, there was a contact name, a marketing representative for Coors in that announcement?
Chief Marketing Officer Andy England.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. We got it. Yeah, I think we'll hunt him down. Let's get him.
Yeah, we'll get him. Hey, look, I've got an email here I want to share.
Okay.
So, Jeffrey, this will give you another opportunity to look for more Zima commercials. Hi there, Tim, Summer, Jeffrey, and Michael. I have a couple of thoughts based on some comments made on shows 130 and 132. This is comes to us from Chris from England. So Chris writes, on show 130, there was the reference about the relationship between Lise and William Edgars. It's clear from the show and what you said in the show that it wasn't so much a marriage as mutual company. My question is, how did Lise and William Edgars come together in the first place? Or more to the point, why did William Edgars start the relationship with Lise, knowing her history, and that it might help to get Garibaldi working for him? Getting even more conspiratorial, could this all have been part of the PsyCorps plan to find out what Edgars was up to, and in which case did the PsyCorps go as far as ruining Lisa's first marriage to ensure she was free from William Edgars, or for William Edgars? Or am I just seeing plots everywhere, even when they don't exist? On show 132, Tim had concerns about the position of the med bay and Narun walking past Lanier. To me, it did not seem to be a problem, given that the Minbari cruisers had a large complement of fighters that would go into battle and would suffer damage easier than the cruiser. Would it not make sense to have the med bay near the hangar deck so that those injured in dogfights could be quickly moved from their fighters to the medical facilities? Given that, it makes sense that Narun could walk past the med bay on the way to the hangar. Just my thoughts. Be interested to see if you agree, disagree, or come up with your own ideas. Keep up the good work. So.
Well, answering the second one first, I disagree, because you wouldn't want a med bay in a high traffic area near fighter base. Just saying.
I would agree, and I would also think that you would want to put that in a place that's not as susceptible to damage, which implies more to the interior of a vessel rather than toward the exterior where fighter bays would be.
Yep, because nothing ruins your day more than having shrapnel fly through your operating room while you've got somebody's guts open.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, to another point, though, as I'm reflecting on the episode, what we see is Narun walk past the med bay, Lanier get up and see him go through a couple doors, and Lanier kind of does that half turn toward the camera that indicates the character's pensive. So it could also be, you know, the next shot then is that, you know, he's calling Delenn. Now, it could also be that he tracked Narun through the ship through 20 decks, and we just didn't bother to show that.
Or maybe he knew from which hallway he took that he was headed out.
That could be. Or maybe you read the script. I'm not sure which.
It's like, standard answer. Why did he do that? It was in the script.
Right.
What's my motivation?
That's like JMS's comment. Somebody once asked him how fast Star Furies fly. He said at the speed of plot.
Uh-huh.
Right. Nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah. As for the first answer, I don't think so. And here's why. After Franz left Lise, she was alone. She had been beaten in court, so left with no money, literally almost nothing. So her getting a job as a receptionist or an assistant or something at, you know, Edgar's Industries, not that far off base. You know, not out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah.
You know, she just happened to marry a guy she thought was nice, and he turned out to be a complete cad.
Yeah, well, you know, she struck his fancy. I don't have any problem with it. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those deals that it's a confluence of things coming together to create the perfect situation so that they can take advantage of what's going on. Their PsyCorps can. I think the whole deal with Garibaldi being mind controlled, you know, that was just trying to get somebody on the inside. But once it works out that it, you know, he's working for Edgars, you know, PsyCorps knows something up. But we find that out in some upcoming episodes exactly what the deal is with all that. So yeah, so I think to a certain extent, Chris, yes, you are seeing plots everywhere.
But Chris, I appreciate how you can get Tim and Summer thinking. It's always fun to smell their brains starting to melt a little bit. And we need more people from the UK to write to us, too. What's that? Oh, yeah.
Did they have Zima in the UK? Probably not, huh?
I don't know.
I would doubt it. If indeed Zima was always a Coors product.
Well, it was Coors Miller U.S. and Molson Coors Brewing Company. So Molson is Canadian, right?
Yes. That would be from Canada, yes.
Canada?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Have another drink of Zima there.
Actually, I think he's been drinking the scotch.
No, I haven't been drinking anything. See, that's the problem. It's time to get the scotch out.
All right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we've done enough to England. We don't need to send them Zima. That's just wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And besides, all the actors on B5 were British anyway.
Really?
Yeah, every English accent is smarter than an American accent any day. I was watching Hunt for Red October the other day again. Mm-hmm. I just love Sean Connery's voice, and you listen to that melodic Scottish tone, and you go, yep, that's a Russian. No doubt, that's Russian.
Anything that aren't Americans got to be foreign.
Brain hurt.
Well, you know what's even more hurtful than that? You ever see Orson Welles' movie, A Touch of Evil?
I haven't.
Fantastic movie. Highly recommend it. But the one bit of disbelief that you must suspend is that Charlton Heston plays a Mexican DEA agent.
Oh, that's comedy gold right there.
Well, you got to see the movie. The movie is brilliant. It is Orson Welles at his best. Utterly fantastic. But yes, it takes 5-10 minutes to that's Charlton Heston. Why are they talking to him like he's a Mexican?
Wasn't there I can't remember the movie. Wasn't there a movie where Jack Palance played like an Apache?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
I'm sure. He probably played everything. Well, then there's John Wayne played Genghis Khan. Which I've not had the good fortune to see, but
Arnold Schwarzenegger as Pancho Villa. He'll kick your ass across the Mexican border.
Right. Yep. Okay.
Very good.
Well, there was a tangent list of tangents.
Hey, it's all TV, right? It's all Hollywood magic. Oh, at its finest or not.
Okay, so as we wrap this up here, go ahead, Tim. Make your prediction. Who's going to win it?
Who's going to win?
And you think we're going for 7, huh?
I'm going to say, jeepers, this is really where it's going to get tough. All right, I'm going to say Tampa in 7.
Tampa in 7. Ooh. Wow, that'd be exciting ball. How about you, Summer?
Yep.
I'm saying Philly in 5.
Philly in 5. Michael, what will you be drinking for the next several weeks?
I'm thinking Tampa in 5, honestly.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. I think they've got that underdog energy going for them right now, and I think they're going to capitalize on it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm optimistic today.
How about you, Jeffrey? What says the Vorlon Empire?
You know, I would love to go along with you, Tim. I think Tampa in 7 would be a dream come true, because that would be a really great series with the underdog winning at the end. I think that'd be awesome television. But I got a feeling that Philly's probably going to spank them in 5.
Mm. Philly's in 5. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's not my preference. That's just...
Just the way you think it's going to
play. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I have a public service announcement.
Okay.
Our hardworking editor, Brad of
We Love Brad
Pod Culture, has also another podcast called The Geek Spin. And if you haven't listened to it, you need to over at thegeekspin.com. He's been nominated for a podcast award. So starting on from October 23rd to November 6th, you can go over there, vote one time a day, go to podcastawards.com, vote for Brad, vote for... Actually, we had a handful of Farpoint Media shows get nominated in there. Just go out and vote once per day. Get Brad an award. He likes collecting them. We want to fill Brad's mantle with podcast awards. Yes, he's in the PodSafe Music category. So just get Brad another award. Keep Brad happy.
Sounds like a plan.
We like Brad.
We do.
Actually,
we tease him
because you know why we like him? It's because he puts up with us. Serious. No other living creature puts up with us quite like Brad does. All right, well, happy Zima to everybody.
Yep.
Yes, thank you for listening. Tune in again next week. That'll be it for this show. Go to the website, donate, please. Help us out a little bit. We're also taking up a collection to help me and several others explore the nether regions of the lost Vorlon homeworld in search of Babylon 5 treasures. So just
the nether
go
regions.
I don't. It's a lost satellite of the Vorlon homeworld or something.
Okay.
So we're taking up a collection so I can rent a car and go out there. People who donate will get first dibs on the way cool stuff that Jeffrey's willing to let go of. So I'm just saying right now.
Get early a bit often.
Yes.
Donate lots.
Donate early, donate often.
Yeah.
I don't know. I may put up. Yeah. We'll have it up there. Just basically, I need to rent a car to get me from Phoenix to LA. And so I can, of course, bring back my booty. And we'll get a really cool Babylon 5 goodies auction going and help Jeff clear some of the cushion space in his storage locker. other than that, if you have a comment for us, you can send us an email, babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Go to the website, leave comments. Go to farpointforums.com, leave comments. Join in the never-ending thread, 83 by 9 by 12. Literally, never-ending. Or leave us a voicemail. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year they took Zima away from us.
And that'll be it. We'll see you next time on the other side of whichever brand of keg we find.